This Edgar Profiles podcast is supported by Ping. Edgar is an association of national federations formed in the year 2000 to develop and encourage initiatives which raise the awareness of golf, both as a participation and competitive sport for individuals with disability. For more information about Edgar, please visit edgargolf.com. Your host for this episode is Tony Bennett. Ping. Play your best.
I'm Tony Bennett. Before I start, I would like to tell you a short, personal, and true story about Ping.
A key resource that has enabled Ping to perform experiments and extensive tests on new golf designs is a superhero who was once described as the world's best golfer. At only 5 feet high, 6 feet wide, and 7 foot thick, weighs over 1,000 pounds, he is known as Pingman. Pingman is a robot that is used for product and prototype testing. He mimics human movement by having a shoulder turn and a wrist hinge that can load a golf shaft on the way down. He can even bend 10 degrees at the waist like a human golfer to accommodate clubs from a wedge to a driver. Pingman hits tens of thousands of golf balls a year. He only hits brand new golf balls to ensure accurate testing and tests 9 different face locations on the product to ensure we know exactly how product will perform from not only centrally struck shots, but from off-centered struck shots too. Pingman can swing it up to 160 miles per hour, which compared to a couple of Ping's big hitters in Bubba Watson and Tony Finau, who get it out at a very respectable 125 miles per hour, Pingman is like no other golfer on the planet. Thanks to the data Pingman produces, Ping only introduces new product when testing it to be proven to be better performing than the current product.
My guest in this conversation is a former footballer who played for his country 57 times, scored on his debut, even though he made his career as a defender, and someone who has lifted trophies in 3 countries. Jess Hu played football at the highest level, employed the mindset of train, eat, sleep, and repeat to help him reach the heights of the game, and the same attitude also helped him to recover from a stroke that suddenly changed his life course. Alone in a hotel room, Jess felt that he was losing his right side. First it was his leg, then his arms, and finally his head. Unable to speak, and the chaos of not knowing what was happening, Jess simply was trying to survive. An incoming telephone call was timely and perhaps saved his life. In this conversation, Jess reveals a steely determination and explains how the tranquility of swinging a club and walking the course in the evening is so special. Please enjoy my conversation with Jess Hu. Okay, yes, good to speak to you today. I've wanted to speak to you for quite a long time. You played in a game for Chelsea against my Manchester United in 1999 at Stamford Bridge.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
It was, but you went on to win 5-0.
Yeah.
At that time, not too many teams put 5 past Man United, and they went on, I will say, they went on to still be the Premier League champions at the end of that season.
But yeah.
But you were a central defender, and you would have had to keep a Dwight York and Andy Cole quiet for 90 minutes. What can you recall from that day?
That was the first game I played for Chelsea at the home ground. And that was the first time. And of course, I was a little bit nervous, but we get started and that's it. I think we played 10 minutes and there were 2-0 to us. That's it.
I'm not going to hold it against you because that was a bad day for me. But before Chelsea, you'd won honours as I think if I'm not wrong, Super League champions in Turkey for Fenerbahce.
Yeah, in Turkey. I came to Turkey in 95. And that year we went winner of the Super League championship in Turkey. Before that, I was in Denmark from Aalborg, and the year before I went to Turkey, we were winning the Danish Championship as well.
So you've had a successful career in football. Can you tell me how your love for football got started?
Oh, I started when I was 6 years old, and I was playing for like fun till I was 20. And then I moved to Aalborg, and then it took over from that time.
How did they find you? Because obviously you were just playing, as you said, for fun. So were you scouted or?
No, I wasn't scouted. I came to the club. That was about it. And the first year I was playing for part-time professional. And they could see it that, he's going to be good. And it took off from there.
And was your family big into sport as you grew up?
My big brother and my two big sisters, they were all playing for the team that I play for. And I was playing cricket for till I was 15, 16 years old. And when I was 15 years old, I came to the Danish national youth team.
That must have been pretty unusual to play cricket in Denmark.
Yeah, it was. It was. I was very talented in all kinds of sports. So, I was playing handball as well, the top league as well.
Yeah.
So that time I was playing handball, cricket and football.
So you will have had to juggle school with all your different sporting pastimes. So how did you manage to balance the two?
I didn't make too much homework. I was always taking it from one day to the next. And
was it always your dream to play football professionally?
No, it wasn't. It was first when I was 18, 19 years old. It really took on.
And can you remember then what you wanted to do when you were first leaving school?
Oh, really? I don't know. I was just having a good time and living my daily life day after day, and that's about it.
So, look, before I change, because I'm going to change sports now from football to golf, but
yeah.
Can you take me back? I've got one more question here on football. Well, maybe a couple more. So, because I'm quite a big football fan, as you can tell. But can you take me back to April 1991? So you're 24 years of age.
Yeah.
You're running out of the tunnel to play your first game for your national team, Denmark. You're playing against Bulgaria. What was going through your mind at that time?
That time I was playing, I was playing offensive midfield player. And it was my first national game for Denmark. And I scored in that game, by the way. we draw against Bulgaria 1-1.
Yep.
And I scored the one goal. And I was very proud. And but it was not really, it just came. And
was it from the head or from the foot?
Yeah, it was from the foot.
Because as a central defender, eventually, I would imagine you did quite a lot of going up at corners and trying to score.
But that time I wasn't playing central defender. I was playing offensive midfield player.
And you played 57 times for your country, I know. And I did a little bit of research to check out when you played. And you played in both. Well, you played the 96 and the 2000 Euro Championships. You were in the squads for both, and you played in 96 and you played in the 98 World Cup in France.
Yeah, I did.
Now, You were the defending champions at Euro 96 after Denmark had shocked the world by winning the 92 tournament in Sweden.
It was a big shock.
I mean, what was that like to be part of a team that was defending champions? You must have had kind of some ambitions for more success, I guess.
Yeah, I remember we played in England and we didn't play very well. So you know, we played three games in the league and we won one and we draw and we lost one. Mm-hmm. And that was the same result as the 92 team have. And the 92, they went through to next round, and we went out.
Right.
So
I know you retired from professional football in March 2001.
Yeah.
And you were pretty young, really, I guess. 35. I mean, yeah. I suppose in those days it was reasonably young, but obviously today it's a little bit older.
It was. You know, I had a big problem with my right ankle, and I had it in the national game against Sweden in April 2000, and I tried to recover as good as I could, but I couldn't play. Mm-hmm. I couldn't play anymore. And you know, in the 2000, I went to the European Championship in Holland, Belgium, and I didn't play a single minute. Mm-hmm.
And so when you finish your career, it was a superb career, Jeff, so congratulations on your career.
Thank you very much.
There must have been other things that you wanted to do. So what was next for Jeff?
Yeah, I was trying to, 2001, I went to commentate for the Danish television. Mm-hmm. And that was going very well, and I came to the 2002 World Cup in Korea and Japan.
Yep.
And I was commentating all the national team games, and from that time I was hijacked to the Channel Plus, who sent English football, and I was in the studio for like 4 or 5 years until 2007 when I had my stroke.
Can you take me back to that day, Jess? Because it's January 2007, and you've suffered this stroke. Yeah. Had you had any warning signs or any strange feelings in the days leading up to this?
No, I didn't have anything, with my family, you know, they didn't have anything at all, and it was just bad luck.
What happened in the moments immediately after, and how important were the paramedics? And I know the paramedics responded very quickly.
Yeah. You know, I was going to Copenhagen to go into a television job. Mm-hmm. The day after, Friday night, we were eating and we went to a restaurant with the two or three guys from the television show. And when I walked back to the hotel and I get up and I went to bed, and suddenly I couldn't feel anything in my right leg, right arm, my right side of the head, and I couldn't talk anything, and I couldn't call anybody. So after I think 4 or 5 minutes, then my phone rang, and I just took it up. And I couldn't talk.
Right.
I could say yes, no, and that's it. And it was my ex-wife. And I tried to mumble her the help, and that's it.
And so was it your ex-wife that called the paramedics?
Yeah, it was.
And when the paramedics arrived, can you remember anything then over the next 24 hours, 48 hours?
You know, I was just trying to survive that time. You know, when the paramedic came, that's it, and they took over. And that time, I just went to sleep.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind? Were you?
Everything was chaos, and everything was what happened? What happened? What happened? You know, I was hospitalized for like 3 days in Copenhagen, mm-hmm. and for nearly 14 days in Aalborg, and then I was in hospital for like 4.5 months in Brønderslev. That's a small town very close to Aalborg.
Right.
So I was hospitalized for like 5 months, I think.
So you lost the use of your right side, and you also, yeah. as you said, you lost the ability to speak.
So yeah.
What did the doctors first say to you, and what did they advise to you in those first few days?
Yeah, you know, after 1 week or 10 days, my ex-wife, a nurse, she took my ex-wife to the side and said to her that my arm will never gonna work again, she said. Mm-hmm. And that was a big shock for my ex-wife. And she didn't say anything to me because, that couldn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think about 2 months, one and a half months after, then I start to move my hand a little bit, and that was it. And that was just the first sign of movement in my arm. And after that, I was training like crazy.
Did you adopt a kind of an athlete's mentality to your rehabilitation, I guess?
Yeah, of course, I did. You know, the doctor at the hospital where I stayed 4.5 months, they couldn't believe it that I was moving so fast,
right?
That I was training like crazy, and that's about the football mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about your speech? Because you, as we said, you'd lost the ability to speak. How quickly did that start to return?
You know, I went to speaking therapist for like 2.5 years, I think. And I couldn't say anything in English. I couldn't say anything in German. I couldn't say anything in Turkish. And, you know, I lost everything completely. And, you know, after a while, my English came a little bit back. And, you know, after 2 or 3 years, I think that everything was coming okay.
Can you talk me through what an average day of rehabilitation looked like for you? What did you do every day?
Oh my God! I was just training, eating, sleeping, training, eating, sleeping, and that's it.
And you did most of that in the hospital.
Hospital, yeah. I did. Yeah.
And what impact does the after effects have on your everyday life today?
Yeah, you know, because I played football for like many years, You know, I made quite a lot of money, and because of that, I can manage to have a quiet life. I don't need to work. I normally when it is good weather like there is now in Denmark, I go to the golf course for like 3, 4, 5 hours, mm-hmm. and then I come home, and that's about it.
Tell me, when did golf enter your life? Yes.
I think that when I played in Brøndby in Denmark, in Copenhagen, I started playing golf, and you know just before I got the stroke, I had a handicap 4.2.
Right, good player.
Yeah, I really played good, and that time I could hit it like a mile, unbelievable. And after, you know, after I had my stroke, I couldn't play at all. I walked like 2-3 holes, and that's it.
Yeah. Who was it that introduced you to the game?
I think that it was 3-4 guys from Brøndby, and you know, John Faxe. He played for Arsenal, I think, 4 or 5 years.
Right.
From 1992, I think. He was one of the guys. You know, I played with Sola and Gosparier.
Okay.
And Hiscock every Wednesday. If we don't play Wednesday, every Wednesday when I played in England.
Right.
Yeah.
And have you had anybody who's helped you with the development of your game? Any coach or any trainer?
Yeah, just a little bit. You know, when I was coming back from the stroke, I was checking with the golf professional in Aalborg, and he's from Scotland. Yeah. And I talked to him a little bit about it, how I should move my left arm, because my right arm, it didn't work. Mm-hmm. So I have to move my left arm around the body, and that's it.
Yes. Is there anything that you find particularly difficult today as a result of your disability?
Yeah, of course. Now I talk to you over the telephone line on a foreign language, and you know, I have FSC, and you know, word finding problems, and that's pretty hard for me to make an interview with you.
Well, you're doing very well. It's a fascinating interview. I'm really enjoying it. So.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to keep you on the line for a bit longer, that's for sure. tell me, Jess, what does golf mean to you?
You know, golf means everything to me, especially after I had this stroke. You know, I go out every day, and I try to make it better every day. And you know, you can't do this with any other sports.
Yeah,
I think that because of the handicap system, and if for example I play for like 34. I can play with a professional.
Correct.
Absolutely. And that's it. And you know, you can't play that for example tennis or anything else.
Yeah, I think that's partly because you're in control of your own ball, where even in other sports where they give some kind of handicaps, or even in tennis or snooker, as long as one person's controlling the ball, then really the higher quality player probably is always going to win because they control the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess it's like a football team. If they've got the ball and they're controlling the game, then it's difficult for the other team to be able to play.
Of course.
So what have you learned about yourself by playing golf?
There's two different lives. I have the golf before I got the stroke, and golf after. Mm-hmm. And before I was very focused, and I was angry if I didn't hit the right shot, every time I saw the little white ball in front of me and I saw the hole, and you know it has to go there. I enjoy every time I went out of the door, going to the golf course, and even if it's raining, when I play with my friends out here in Aalborg Golf Club, every time one of them is hitting a bad shot and he's throwing with his iron around, and I always say to him, come on, it's just a game of golf.
Yeah.
And he always say that, you're right.
So you've gained some patience and some more acceptance of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So exactly.
Out of all the things that you've learned by playing golf, are there any takeaways that might be useful for other people to learn from? I mean, obviously, one of them is be more patient and take a chill pill.
Yeah, more patient. I have difficulties with the many people coming around and stuff. And sometimes I go out, for example, 8 o'clock in the night and play nine holes for myself. Yeah. And this time of day, I walk around completely in silence, and everybody is away, and that's about it. I really like to hit the ball and walk and pull my thoughts together, mm-hmm. and that's it.
It's almost meditative.
Yeah, it is.
Tell me, are there any adjustments that you might make to golf to make it more user-friendly for golfers with disability?
You can see if you watch me playing, I hit it very, very slow, and I only use my left arm, and I hit it very slow. I do everything according to the book. I do everything like the professional is doing, that's about it. If I'm playing with another handicap, lost a leg and missing a right arm or something, I think maybe they are making it a little bit different than I am.
Some of the players like to play with players that have got similar disabilities, and other players like to play with players that have got different disabilities. What are your thoughts on that?
In the European Championship, which is coming up in Portugal,
yep.
For like one month ago, one month yep. later, yep. I see that all the disabilities are very good. You know, that's even if you miss a leg, or even if you miss an arm, even if you had a stroke like me, and you know, all of them, they are playing for like a handicap zero.
Yeah,
that's it.
So everybody plays the same game.
Everybody's playing the same game. That's a little bit different than if you are swimming and you have disabilities for swimming. Let's say that if you swim with one arm and one leg and that's a little bit different than playing golf.
Yeah, they tend to have different categories for different disabilities.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think it's one of the strengths of golf is that golf plays together. Everybody plays together: professionals and amateurs, men and women, able-bodied, disabled. It's everybody plays the game together, and I think the handicap system is, to a larger extent, the reason why we can do that.
It's very, very good. Very, very good.
And of course, one other thing is that we're playing our own ball, so we're in control of our own ball.
Exactly, yeah.
Tell me, I'm just going to ask you three or four more questions before I'm going to let you go for dinner. So, is there anything about Jess that might surprise us?
No, I'm just an ordinary guy. That's it.
So, ordinary guy that's got championship medals and plays golf to a good level and
Of course I have the Danish championship and the Danish FA Cup and the Turkish championship and the English FA Cup.
Don't mention the English FA Cup, please. Do not mention the English FA Cup.
In 2000, we won the FA Cup.
I know you did.
Yeah.
Tell me, which piece of golf equipment gives you the most joy, Jess?
Oh, my putter.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I got the stroke, I have difficulties with my length of the game.
Yes.
And the shorter the iron is, the better it is. So the putter, I putted very good before, and I put very good now. Okay. That's it. You know, before I could hit a driver like 250 yards, mm-hmm. 270 yards, and now I can hit it, if I really, really hit it good, then I can hit it like 190 yards.
Yep.
Yeah. So
it's always good to be friends with your putter, I can assure you.
Yeah. You know, putting is money.
Putting is money, exactly right. If you could play a four ball with anybody, dead or alive, who would your three playing companions be and why?
Let me see. Definitely Rory McIlroy.
Okay.
I think he's a wonderful player.
He sure is.
Wonderful player. You know, he's very, very good, and he's very calm, and he's got the most beautiful golf swing of all time.
Well, he's leading after two rounds at the PGA Championship, which is going on right now, so...
He is there.
So, okay, so you've got Rory McIlroy in your group. Who else?
Yeah, and the other one is Tiger.
Okay.
I always admire Tiger. You know, even if he's up and down. But, you know, on the golf course, Tiger is Tiger.
Yeah. Okay, so that's two players. Have you got one more player to make up the four ball?
That's Thomas Bjørn.
Thomas Bjørn, Ryder Cup captain for 2018.
Yeah, you know, when I was playing for Chelsea Thomas Bjørn was living in London.
Yep.
He came to Chelsea's football games, and I got him tickets.
Okay.
So I know him a little bit.
Okay. Now, not many people know Thomas Bjørn.
And yeah.
Because when the average golf fan looks at Thomas Bjørn from the outside.
Yeah.
They think he's quite serious and gruff, and actually sometimes they think he's a little bit miserable, but having met him, he's anything but that. He's a funny guy.
But listen, he's unbelievable funny.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Yeah. And that's about the same you say about, for example, Peter Schmeichel.
Right.
He's a great, 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 great guy.
Well, Peter, I've got a very tenuous link to Peter Schmeichel in that my son went to the same school as Peter Schmeichel's son.
And they, yeah, Casper.
And they played football together in the same football team in the school.
Really?
So there you go. That's my tenuous link to Peter Schmeichel.
Yeah.
Tell me, I've got a couple last question really for you here, Jess. If you could magically be with somebody who has got a similar disability to yourself, who is in the process of having a stroke or has just had a stroke, what advice would you want to offer them?
Oh my God, that's a hard question. The first year after you had the stroke, you have to train. After 1 year, 1.5 year, you can't develop anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You have to train like crazy the first year.
Right.
I had a big blood cloth in my head.
Yeah.
It was like 4 centimeter. Times 2 centimeters.
That's a very big
one. And that's a big one.
Yeah.
And, what can I say?
So just keep training. Hang on. Keep training.
Yeah. You never know about this. When I was having my blood cloth for like 1 year, I went to the doctor in Aalborg about the stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a head doctor.
Okay.
For the stroke for like 26 years.
Right.
And I asked him how will I progress? Come on, you have to tell me something. And he said to me, listen, 1 month, 1 year, 10 years, you never know what you get.
Yeah.
So it was just keep on training all the time. And I train like crazy every day. When I go to the golf course in the morning, I come home in the afternoon, and eating, and then I go to gym in the night, just for half an hour.
Right.
And I supposed to do that every day. Because I can't get any more, but keep it in the same level.
I mean, that's the athlete's discipline that's coming through there. That you understand. That,
oh yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yes, it's been fascinating chatting to you. I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let you go for the dinner now, or maybe to the gym. I'm not sure. Maybe you're going to the gym next. I'm not sure.
Listen. Now I'm very tired.
Yes, thank you very much for your time. Look, if somebody wanted to reach you, how could they find you?
you know, I'm on Facebook. I have a telephone line. Like normal people.
Great. Well, yes, maybe I can get that Facebook handle from you, and then we can put that in with the interview, so that if somebody wants to reach out to you, then they can perhaps reach you.
Of course.
Yes, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it. Hopefully I'm going to see you at an event sometime later this year, and we'll catch up and maybe have a beer.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you, John.
Ciao, ciao.
This was an Edgar Player story supported by Ping, helping golfers to play their best. For more information about Edgar, please visit edgargolf.com. Stay tuned for the next Edgar podcast. Ping. Play your best.